All right, we're recording. Okay, well, welcome back to another episode of At the Movies, where we're here to discuss. We are here to discuss going to the movies. We have a kind of a light crew with us here again today. So we have Melissa and Danielle, and Kara's back with us again today. Hello, everyone. How's everyone?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Doing good. So not a lot to discuss today. We're kind of having an open forum. We had a topic to discuss, but we called an audible the last second, and we're gonna freeform it. We're gonna see what we can make out of this episode, from the hip style, shoot from the hip. But a couple things we wanted to at least discuss is today is Groundhog Day.
Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right. Everyone's seen the movie, right? Everyone has. It's one of those movies that everyone has to have seen by now.
Like 100 times, like at least 100 times, and would watch it 100 more times.
Mm-hmm. A couple things about the movie that maybe some people didn't know. Well, first of all, just we'll do some stats, because Brandon usually likes stats that have dollar values attached to them. So it had a budget. It was reported having a budget of somewhere between $14 to $13 million. But it made...
Really?
Yeah. Like, that's a pretty big variance. Yeah. Well, also, they had Bill Murray. Like, he's going to take a big chunk of that change.
Have you ever met Bill Murray?
No. Do I look like someone who's met Bill Murray?
I like Most how Danielle like. Asks it like it's like a normal... Have you met him? Like,
have you been to Starbucks? Have you met Bill Murray?
I bet Bill Murray has not been. If you ever meet him, he's like... I don't know. He always makes me think of somebody who's just like flopping around, like, and just would like pop up and be like, "Hey guys," mm-hmm. like that's like who he is. It's
well,
weird.
That's also his
like so
his
chill.
That's his fan facing persona. But apparently, there's a different persona that's attached to him when it comes to work, because this movie also is the movie that basically put the strain on the relationship between him and longtime friend Harold Ramis. After this film was released, they didn't speak for 20 years almost.
Wait, why is that?
They had some creative differences over the film. It was also, I mean, I shouldn't speculate. I wasn't part of the feud. I don't really know what each other's gripes were. I think Bill Murray ultimately had a different direction he wanted to kind of take the film. Harold Ramis had a different one. And they finished it after it was done. Apparently, Bill Murray was reported to say he did not like the film very much. And that put a lot of tension on his relationship with Harold Ramis, who, you know, they've done such films together as Stripes, Caddyshack, and Ghostbusters.
Good old Caddyshack.
But yeah, that film, apparently, you know, they were on not speaking terms for, you know, 2 decades. Up until... Wow. A few months before Harold Ramis passed, they were able to bury the hatchet and get their relationship squared away. So at least Harold Ramis didn't die with the feud still going on, which is good.
And just, I wonder if, I don't know. I just think like that film did so well and it was so popular for them to keep the riff over that film, which was wildly successful.
Well, sure, but I don't think that was what the gripe was
about.
I think their gripe was about their working relationship and their creative differences and ultimately the kind of actor that Bill Murray wanted to be and he ended up becoming. You know, I think he wanted to do more serious roles, things that like would depart from normal comedic performances. And he eventually did all that, you know, Lost in Translation. So he got to that status that he wanted to get to, but I think he was hoping it was going to come a little earlier in his career. But yeah, that's my Groundhog Day story.
Update.
Mm-hmm. Fun facts. Mm-hmm. Did you know?
I know, but also considering Bill Murray and that movie, apparently there were some other actors that were considered for the role at one point. You guys know who they were? You should, because they're in your show notes. But I'll tell you. So they were also considering, and again, I pulled this from IMDb, whether or not this is true or false, please don't hold me accountable for any, you know, misrepresented facts. But apparently some actors that were considered were Tom Hanks, John Travolta, Steve Martin, and Chevy Chase. But reportedly, Harold Ramis declined all of these because they thought that they were too nice. And the Phil Connors character has to be kind of a prick in the beginning. And he has to have that arc where he's no longer a prick. I mean, I think they could have gone that way with Chevy Chase, because I think
I think he can be a critic. I mean, yeah.
I actually heard he was kind of rough to work with sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't hear about all the spat on Community?
Yeah, it's weird to think about any of those people in the role, though.
It is. Well,
that's
what happens when you think about any actor that you've known for an iconic role that other actors were considered for. I mean, when we did that Halloween episode, we were talking about a bunch of iconic people that were, you know, at least at one point considered for the roles of a bunch of different people in The Exorcist, you know, the different priests, the mother, the daughter, like tons of stars were, you know, quote unquote considered for the role. I don't know if that's true. It's what the internet tells me.
Everything you read on the internet's true, Scott.
Not everything. Not everything.
Everything. Yeah. Well,
for Iron Man, I guess Robert Downey Jr. really wanted Bill Murray in it. And the rumor is it was for the voice of Jarvis.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah, which whenever I kind of hear that now, I always picture what it would sound like. I don't know if that's the role, but Downey has talked many times about how Bill Murray infamously has like a 1-800 number that you call and leave.
He does, yeah.
Want to work with him, and maybe he listens to it, maybe he doesn't, maybe he gets back to you, maybe he doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to get to the level of success where I can just have a 1-800 number and decide whether I want to do stuff or not. That seems like very awesome to be able to do. But for Iron Man, I think he just never replied.
Yeah, and I think he hasn't done much like just voice work. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head was Garfield, and he hated Garfield. Which I think
because he thought it was a Coen brothers movie, right?
Right.
Because the writer is Joel Cohen.
Right.
And he thought it was Coen.
Oh my goodness.
So funny.
Oops.
Brandon and I went to a random concert here in town with my parents. My parents bought the tickets. It was like a festival kind of concert. A lot of older musicians, like a random group. I think it wasn't a jazz fest, but it was something really similar. And we show up, and out of nowhere, Bill Murray just walks out on the stage. He's like, I'm going to join you guys tonight. Apparently he came with one of the magician. Oh my God, I'm so tired. He came with one of the musicians who was his friend and was just like, well, I'm here. I might as well MC the show.
So wait, did he perform or just MC?
No, he just like came out and talked every once in a while.
That's an amazing, how amazing. Was it a big concert?
Yeah, it was huge, but it wasn't like I don't know. It was, I'll have to go find the name of it because I don't remember. My parents bought it. It was a bunch of like bands that they liked. It was like rock and a little bit of country. Like Sheryl Crow showed up. I don't know. But it wasn't something that I normally just would have gone to.
Right.
And we went, and sure enough, there's Bill Murray just chilling out. Wasn't on the program. Wasn't supposed to be there. Just decided, I'm here. I may as well MC.
Well,
very Bill Murray-esque from what I've heard.
Yes, it does. Amazing experience. Yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of Groundhog Day, Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow, which means 6 more weeks of winter.
But isn't that always how it is?
No, sometimes he predicts early spring.
Bullshit. I call bullshit.
I could probably...
Do you guys follow the Instagram account Fat Carrie Bradshaw?
No.
No.
No. Okay, so I bring this up. There's a reason I bring this up. He posted the funniest video today for Groundhog Day. And his bit is, he's very, you know, Sex in the City, whatever. But he came out and like he was doing a press conference as the groundhog. And then he looks over and he goes, who the fuck is that? Scott, you might have to bleep me. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. Who the fuck is that over there? And he like grabs a mask. He's like, my agent said no one would be here. I can't do this. I can't tell you where there's going to be winter. This person over here is going to give me COVID. And like goes this whole tangent.
My God.
I'm not doing it justice because I'm not a funny human. But he's really funny. So if you want a good laugh today, please go look at Fat Carrie Bradshaw on Instagram, because it's real funny.
I think you did it justice. I think you did it justice.
I don't know that I did.
All right, Scott, what else?
What else do we have?
Yeah.
I mean, we have some bad news. We lost some people last week.
We lost a lot of people.
We did. We lost some great people too. Cloris Leachman, Cicely Tyson.
It was a rough week.
Cloris Leachman, if you guys aren't familiar, was in such movies as Last Picture Show, Young Frankenstein, History of the World Part 1, Beverly Hillbillies, one of my personal favorites, Beer Fest. She had a nice cameo in Beer Fest. Cicely Tyson was also known for such roles in Sounder, Roots, The Help, Fried Green Tomatoes, Because of Winn-Dixie, Diary of a Mad Black Woman, and other, you know, Tyler Perry titles. Sad week.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Sorry to really kill the mood with all of the fun, you know.
I know. We were talking Instagram about Punxsutawney Phil and
who decided to join.
We had to pay our respects. We do.
So well,
we have a moment of silence? No.
I think you have a story to tell us, Scott.
I do. I wasn't sure if I told you guys a story or not, but I guess since we're kind of having an audible day, I'll just tell the story of when we first started this podcast. Before we even started recording the first episode, I remember I was telling my parents, they came in for a visit, you know, and they were getting all of my updates of what's been going on with work and such. And you know, I was telling my mom about, oh, well, you know, one of the things that they wanted to do was to start a podcast where we would basically talk about the movie going experience and how important we think it is and how impactful we think it is. And we'll talk to exhibitors and filmmakers and stuff and basically rally around the idea of going to the movies is important. And we want to support, you know, that function, you know. Yeah, but I remember when I was telling my mom this story about like what the podcast was going to be about. And that's basically like, I gave her the short-winded version. Like that was even probably longer than what I was telling her. And mid-sentence, I looked over and she was asleep when I was giving her the synopsis of what the podcast was going to be about. And I was like, my career as a podcast host is done already.
That was
amazing.
Even my mom was like, yeah, you are really boring. Like, get to it, man. Get to it.
Oh my gosh. You never did tell us that story, but that is pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I still don't know why I'm here and
Mom
I'm like,
for the win.
Like we have Danielle who is, you know, a trained professional when it comes to
super interesting.
But you're trained. Like you you
bonus point?
You speak clearly, like you interview, you know. Again, you drop the question like, have you ever met Bill Murray? No, of course I haven't met Bill Murray. And you're like, oh, I just talked to Owen Wilson yesterday. Like, this is what you do for a living. Meanwhile, they give, you know, the person who leads in every episode to me. No one wants to listen to me.
Nobody wants to listen to you.
Well, I would say that our listening numbers probably reflect that no one wants to listen to me.
Speaking of that, let's just do a quick plug while we're thinking about it. If you do listen, thank you so much for listening. And please give us a review. You can do that in Apple Podcasts. Whatever star rating you want to give us, we really like 5 stars because it helps us gain more reach and get more people to come on the podcast. But really, in those reviews, tell us what you want to hear. What do you want to talk about? What do you want us to talk about? Or are there topics that you'd love to hear from us? Or is this the most boring podcast that you've ever listened to? You know, affirm Scott's beliefs that his voice puts you to sleep.
Oh yeah.
Hey, but we could start like an ASMR podcast.
Yeah.
Good.
Scott, there's hope for you.
Mm-hmm.
Nighty night. Nap
that
time.
Nice soothing, you know, AM radio voice.
Yeah, you do kind of have a very soothing voice in that way.
It's all the cigarettes.
So, Danielle, did you see a movie this week that's coming out this weekend?
I did, and we have to talk about it because I don't know how I feel right now. So on Monday.
Yes. That was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Today's Tuesday.
Yep. Punk's Tony Phil.
And if you're listening to the podcast, it's not Wednesday.
Yes.
Unless it's not Wednesday and it's a day after.
I literally didn't know what day of the week it was just then in that moment. I didn't know.
You need a nap. She needs a nap.
I need a nap for sure. Anyway, on Monday, which apparently was yesterday, I interviewed Owen Wilson for his new film, Bliss, where it's him and Selma Hayek. And I've got to pull the synopsis up for this because I don't even know how to describe this movie. First of all, I want to say that Owen Wilson is actually really good in it. Like the performances, not actually, but you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to figure out this movie, but it's not the performances. The performances are good. Owen was great. He somehow manages to be really, really likable, but also really vulnerable, but not overly like wimpy vulnerable. You just kind of feel for him and you get him and you want him to win in whatever way. Like you want him to be happy at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, especially with the script and the way this movie is, I'd imagine that that's really hard to do. It's really hard to bring a performance like that to a storyline like this.
Well, give us the storyline.
It doesn't feel linear. So this is the synopsis. An unfulfilled man and a mysterious woman believe they are living in a simulated reality. But when their newfound bliss, hence the title, world begins to bleed into the ugly world, they must decide what's real and where they truly belong. So the director, Mike Cahill, this is kind of his bit. It's his thing. Most of his movies are about like the supernatural slash, like he did I, Origins. He did Another Earth. He, of course, did Bliss. Like that's just kind of his headspace. And what is like freaking me out about this movie, and I can't quite figure it out like how I feel about it, is because it doesn't give you an answer. The whole thing happens and you're like, wait, what's real, what's not, what actually happened, what didn't happen? No answer.
It's a mind bender.
It's a mind
bender. Is that what those are called? It's like a mind bender.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, when you say no answer, I've got questions. I have questions and hopefully
I might have answers. I don't know. This movie didn't have answers, but I might.
No, after the movie, were you like, sorry, hold on, Scott. Were you just like, your mind was all scrambled?
Well, a lot of the movie's also kind of depressing. Like it's kind of dark. Mm-hmm. And so I finished the movie and Brandon watched it with me and he was like, what? Why? No. Why? Why do I feel? And I was like, yeah, I feel a certain kind of way, but I don't know what that kind of way is.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott, I'm sorry, please. Mm-hmm. I know you have questions, go.
Well, no, I guess my-
Scott's so excited. He's like, I'm gonna get into this.
Well, no, this is just, I think this is probably just, when you say that there's no answers, and again, this is something that apparently frustrates Melissa, because before we started recording this podcast, we were kind of reviewing this particular story. Yeah. And Melissa was saying how much she likes closure in a movie, that like
there is no closure. Here's the beginning,
here's the middle, here's the end, that's the story, now move the fuck on, right?
No. Not like leave me with an open question. I can't, I have to Google it. I'm freaking out if there's, I don't know how it ends. How does it end?
There's only one element of closure, everything else wide open.
But I would say maybe there were some questions that were answered, but maybe not up to a certain satisfactory point. And I guess I can't speak to this film because I haven't seen it. It's not even out yet. But I can talk to films that are like this, because these are the films that like I live and breathe for. The films that like,
you go watch it and you let me know what you think.
The films that when you're done, you're like, wait a second, what did I watch? I need to go through this again. So I feel like I really understand it. Like, that experience to me is why I go to the movies, because
you'll love this movie.
Well, yeah, like I can't, I, so most of the stuff that like I've been watching, new stuff that I've been watching at home is the same kind of stuff. Like, what was one that I watched recently? Did you guys hear of a film called Vivarium that had Imogen Poots and Jesse Eisenberg in it? Yeah. It was very, very good. And it's about like a couple that are searching for a home to move into, and they go to this, you know, very idyllic, but very carbon copied, you know, neighborhood where every house looks exactly the same. And they go and they view the house and they try to leave, and they can't find their way out of this like cul-de-sac area. And they realize that basically like they're trapped. Like every turn that they make, they can't get out. So they go back to the house.
Massive anxiety. Absolutely not. Yep.
Nope. And so again, like there are lots of, you know, things that make you go, okay, what does this mean? What does that mean? What does this represent? And I think would a literally lot of it.
Stop the movie, walk out of my house and walk a block just to make sure I can get out of my neighborhood.
Well, I don't think that you have to be that literal about, you know, the,
would not handle
the feeling that it makes you feel. But that's the thing is, it's like movies are supposed to do that to us, right? They're supposed to give you a certain, they're supposed to lend a certain kind of feeling or aesthetic or mentality that people can follow. But I also think that people like me, maybe other listeners, I have a feeling Kara might be a little bit like this, but like we've been so desensitized to the way we are told stories that when you have the traditional three-act structure, here's the characters, here's their problem, here's the solution, we get bored with that. Because again, like you can have a nice cookie cutter story, but like, I've heard this story before and I've heard it told this way before. I want to know what happens at the end first this time. And then we look in the middle a little bit, and then something happens that is completely random that like is disconnected from everything, but it's in the movie. So it has meaning. It has a place. It's warranted, but you don't know why. You just have a feeling or a reaction to it, which is no, those are the feelings that like I'm always chasing when I watch movies.
Can I jump in here?
Absolutely.
So I think what you're saying is 100% valid. And I think too, like something like Inception, where it's, you're like, you're kind of jumping in. Like I really enjoyed Inception, and I don't feel like that gave you your start, beginning, and I feel like that's more of what you were talking about. But with Bliss, I don't think either world was fully explored enough for me to want to figure it out. It just left everything open. I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, what is this? What is what? Like the one of the worlds, you don't spend very much time in it and you don't really understand what it is or how it is. There's not a lot of backstory to it. There's more backstory in this other world, but then even the other world, you're really not completely sure what that is. And the other world, the aesthetic of it is really dark and gray and gloomy. So you're like, well, it was two polar opposites. And I get that because that was kind of the point. They're so opposite, but it left me feeling like I didn't have an attachment to either. And so I didn't really know why I should be invested in either. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. And so. Maybe that's also the point, because I think one thing that people forget is a lot of the emotions that you feel during a movie, regardless of whether or not you know where they're coming from, they're purposefully put there. Like the director wants you to feel this level of discomfort or disorientation. And you may not understand completely why you feel that way, but it's definitely intended. And so I think that's also another thing about not necessarily giving people, you know, here's your character, here's their arc, they're done with their story. Now, you know, we move on. There's the happy ending or there's the sad ending. Or just like there's the ambiguous ending of like, well, it didn't really end with like how I thought it was going to end. But yeah, I think it's maybe a taste preferential thing. Some people don't really like to be screwed with when they're, you know, going in for entertainment. I understand that. Not everyone, you know, can like David Lynch as much as I do.
I have no problem with David Lynch. I really am interested to hear what you think of this movie.
Well, I want to watch
it. You've got to watch it. You've got to watch it and then tell me what you think of it.
Well, it comes out, this weekend?
It comes out the 5th.
I'll watch it.
Yeah.
So does that affect your interview process?
Do you want?
Like, does that affect your interview process, Danielle, when it's like a
100%.
Yeah. Like 100%. You're not. Yeah. Okay.
So for this one, I had 4 minutes. My whole interview was 4 minutes. That's the time I got. And because I wasn't quite sure, I leaned into that a lot. And I even asked in the interview, I said, I feel like there are a lot of different ways you can watch this movie. There's no one, here's the path. There's a lot of different rabbit holes you could go down. And so I asked Owen, I was like, what did you go down? Like, how did you take this? Where did you want to go with it? And then there is a scene in it that I asked about that was a little technical, or it seemed technical. There's a scene where they're in a roller rink, and part of the movie is, you don't know what's real or what's fake, but Selma Hayek's character seems to have telekinesis because she's saying, this is not the real world, it's a made up world. And so she shows Owen Wilson's character that he can do things just with his mind and with his hands. And so they're in this roller rink, and what they do starts to almost become a little manic and a little mean. They go from doing small things where they're, you know, helping people or getting back at somebody else who was mean, to basically like destroying an entire roller rink. And you've got people like flying across while they're skating together. And it just seems like one of those scenes that would be technically taxing. And so I did ask about that because that was something tangible. I could be like, let's talk about this. I actually know what this is. I can talk about this thing. And fun fact, Owen Wilson forgot how to roller skate. And so he had to have a roller skating coach.
Oh,
I did not know that was an actual profession. Who is a roller skating coach? This is brilliant. I love this, but I didn't know that was an actual profession. And the studio hired one to help him because he just couldn't. He was like, I thought I would be fine, but I was not fine.
I feel like that's probably a profession. The day the studio was like, Owen Wilson can't roller skate, we have to find someone.
Somebody
to teach
was
him.
Like,
and yeah. Someone's like, I can roller skate. Like, I can probably teach him.
Yeah. Somebody got paid to teach Owen Wilson how to rollerblade for this scene. So we asked about that. I talked to him about that for a little bit. And then I actually finished it off by saying, you know, what do you hope people walk away from this film thinking or talking about? Because it doesn't have just that satisfying, this is the end, this is what happens, this is kind of the final chapter. It's very open to interpretation at the end. And so he kind of summed that up for me. And so that's, when I have a film like that, I really talk about their own personal experience to the film and with the script, and how they related to it whenever they first signed on for the project. We at the beginning too did talk about the script, because they said, I was so interested to know, as an actor, how do you react to getting a script like this? Because there's no way, there is absolutely no way somebody would get the script to this movie and understand it. 100%, no way, won't happen, doesn't happen, can't happen. There's just no.
That's a pretty big stretch, though. That's a pretty big stretch to say, like, no one's going to understand the script. If no, no one. How
he
to get
even
funding.
Said, Owen even said that he, reading it, was a really complicated, like, story to understand, that he wouldn't have gotten it. And he was like, I had the, you know, ability to talk to the director first before I ever saw the script. And he was like, even then, it's open to so much interpretation in a lot of ways. So then I had to figure out what it was to me and how I felt about it. And that kind of got us into the other conversation. But if this movie was just the script on paper, you'd be like, what is happening? Like, I don't know. You just,
fair enough.
So did you hold only 4 minutes during the interview?
Do what?
Was it only 4 minutes that you really had? Wow.
I think I went a little bit over at the end, because when they told me to wrap up, I asked him one, I was like, as we wrap, one final question, make it short, keep it short. And that's when I asked him to basically bookend it. Because you need, like, you have to have some sort of closure for something like that. That's, you got to have an ender, if you will. I was going to say something, but I totally forgot with Kara's question. I had something to say to you, Scott, but I don't remember now.
You had something to say to me regarding Kara's question?
No. Before Kara's question, whatever we were talking about before Kara's question. And I totally forgot.
Well, I mean, I was basically saying that, I think that, maybe not everyone gets the same thing out of more ambiguously presented films. But mm-hmm. to me, like, those are the films that I really seek out. Those are the films that, like, to me, they stand out more than, you know, a Marvel movie or, a romantic comedy, which, again, I'll watch both of those happily because I just like watching movies. But the ones that really stimulate me are the ones that, like, get into my head and they stay there for days. Because when I watch Iron Man on the big screen, as soon as I'm out of that theater, I don't think about it again.
Really?
Yeah. Because again,
oh my gosh, I can get back to those movies all day.
For me, like, I kind of side a little bit with Scorsese and his opinion that, like, they're roller coasters, and like everyone loves a roller coaster. Yeah. But like, as soon as I'm off the roller coaster, I don't think about how great it was on the roller coaster. I'm like, okay, well, let's get on the next line and we'll go on the next roller coaster. If you really want to make an impression on me, like, find a way to slap me in the face and confuse me a bit, and you'll probably have my attention because I feel like I need to be paying better attention. And Danielle has a story.
I remembered. Right. It's not really a story. I remembered. So I love Selma Hayek. I did not get to interview her for this one, but I've interviewed her before. And she's like a ball of energy. She is an actual ball of energy. She is so sweet, so nice, so, like, just vivacious, full of life. She's wonderful. And in this movie, her character is very, very large, very big, larger than life, if you will. But I will say, I feel so bad saying this as a woman. I feel really bad saying this. The way they dressed her in the tank tops and, like, the homeless person gear, her boobs on such a tiny frame were, like, in your face all the time. And there's this one scene where she even runs up to a group of prostitutes and she bops them all on the boobs. And she just goes, fake, 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 as she's, like, bopping him in the boob. And then she runs off shaking her own boobs going, mine are real. like, what is happening?
Wow.
I feel like it's my place as the only man in this podcast right now to not comment whatsoever.
And she's running towards a guy's car who's trying to pick up the prostitutes. And I'm like, what is that? And she disappears. She disappears a couple times in the movies or in the movie with this guy in the car. And you think she's prostituting or something, but it's never explained. Her character is not a prostitute. Like, you don't know where she's going or why. And it's never explained. And then you've got a scene like that where she's bopping other prostitutes on the boobs. And you're just like, what does this do? Other than make me go, whoa.
Well, I still feel that there's probably context there. There has to be. Super I'm giving the director the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't like, we've got Selma Hayek here and I'm just going to put her in a tight top because I'm the director and boots. I can. I have a feeling it's probably warranted, but I can't speak because I haven't seen it.
Scott, I think you need to watch it this weekend so we can just kind of recap this conversation.
So I can come back and explain to you guys what the movie is about?
Yeah. I'm going to get a text message. I'm going to get a text message this weekend. Just, oh my God, the boob bop.
No, you'll never get that text message from me. Absolutely not.
Oh my gosh. I haven't even watched the trailer. I'm going to watch the trailer when we're done with the podcast, but...
I do love that Scott was, like, doing a deep dive of, like, how you feel about movies making you think a certain way. And Danielle,
and then I totally ruined it.
Oh my God, I got to bring up that boob part.
Well, I think that's another thing is like, people also forget that, like, you know, when you go to the movies, most people are looking for an escape. I would say probably 80% of the people who are going there are looking for an escape from their own drama in their lives, their own mundane routine that they have. And so they just want 2 hours of just like, oh, I don't have to think about anything else but these characters, this plot, and the situation that they're in, right? I understand that. But yeah, for me, it's a different story. Like, I don't get as invested in those because, again, I feel like they're temporary. Mm-hmm. They don't have as much of a lasting effect on me. And not everyone wants to necessarily feel the emotions that the director or the writer want to make you feel, which sometimes can be very sad, very upsetting, very disturbing, what have you. But those are the things that usually I'm curious about. I want to know what the director or the writer has to say about this certain subject. I mean, we're being very ambiguous here because we're not talking about a specific film. But yeah, those style of films usually are the ones that I kind of seek out. And I think a lot of people, you know, may kind of, I don't know, knock them or challenge them because they don't have a very, you know, well drawn out presentation of what it's supposed to be. Everything's tied up in a nice little bow and here's your story, here's your entertainment. Now go home and go back to your lives. Like, yeah, that's not the stuff that I seek out. I seek out the things that I want to watch again the moment I'm done with them. Cause I'm like, oh, well, now that this part has been explained, this opening scene thing makes way more sense because it felt really disconnected and kind of discombobulated. Like now it has context. For a lot of people, they don't revisit the films, but they're like, I don't understand this. I'm just going to Google what it meant. Like Melissa does.
I do that all the time. I need the closure.
Yeah, I will say this film does deal with a lot of this idea of escapism. That is a huge theme in the film. And I, for one, can appreciate that, especially as a movie lover. Going back to what you said, Scott, you know, I go to the movies because I love to get lost. I love to get lost. And that is something that this movie does definitely represent.
I love a good story. I feel like I like that we're talking about like just our different styles of like movies or whatever, but I like to also just go to the theater and leave my worries behind and really just engross myself into a movie. And really, as we talk about all the time, I really can only do that at a theater. I do not do that at home ever. I'm on my laptop, I'm on my phone, I'm still working. And I really miss that. But I think there's a range of different films that do that for me too. Mm-hmm. So, Kara,
be
quiet. Anything to add?
I want to hear from you. Yeah, I want to hear more about some of the things you've watched that like have made an impression on you.
I agree with Scott. I mean, I was a film buyer for a while, so I had to watch like it was such a terrible thing. I mean, I watched everything. So, I mean, we all in this business see so many movies that within 10 minutes, we know exactly what's going to happen and when, and it does. So, I mean, a lot of movies I give a pass to on things that are, you know, typically wrong with them. If there's something different about them, that kind of draws me in, you know, if they make me think, if, you know, something unexpected happens, like I love like unexpected stuff. I really loved, I know we've talked about Promising Young Woman on the podcast before. I mean, I'm not going to give out any spoilers, but the ending was not the route that I thought it was going to take. Mm-hmm. And I already I really enjoyed the film already. And then when it took a different route, it like shot it up to a whole nother level for me because it was not how I thought it was going to go.
It's high on my list, but like, I'm not sure if I want to rent it or if I want to wait to try to see it in the theater. Because right now it's like 20 bucks on iTunes, I think.
I would do both. It's worth it. It's worth it.
All right.
It's good.
Well, I did rent Antebellum. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh yeah. Cool. Yeah, my most recent I watched
I'm out.
The Edgar Wright documentary.
The Sparks Brothers?
Yeah. So
how was it?
I loved it. I loved it a lot. So I didn't know a lot about it's about a band mm-hmm. called Sparks. I didn't know a lot about them prior to watching the documentary. It's Edgar Wright's first documentary. The tagline is, it's your favorite band's favorite band. Mm-hmm. And it basically kind of goes through how influential they are without ever truly like making it huge. They've been together since like the mid 60s. They are in their 70s now and still like making music. And it was super fun to watch, like going in kind of blind to it and then kind of watching Edgar Wright's kind of love letter to them going through their entire catalog. It was super fun.
I heard a lot about that one.
Really like eccentric, fun people to watch. I don't know if it's quarantine or what. I feel like the last year I've seen more documentaries than I ever have before. I've really been enjoying just like random documentaries. Like, oh, that's interesting.
I'm with you there. Brandon and I have been watching far more documentaries or docuseries
than I'm not sure why.
Ever watched before.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. Like, I've never watched this many documentaries as I've watched in the last year.
I love a good documentary.
Me too.
But, like, there's good ones that have been coming out lately.
We should do an episode on our favorites.
Yeah, I'm for it. Did any of you watch the the documentary on Netflix? Man, I'm forgetting what it's called. It's the one about the Night Stalker. I think it is called the Night Stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I haven't watched it yet, but
the creepiest thing happened while Brandon and I were watching it. So there's a scene. Scott, you said you watched it?
I did.
Okay, so there's a scene where he is walking into, or they're doing a reenactment, and somebody's talking about how he walked into the bedroom. And at the exact same time that this is happening on the TV in front of us, our garage door, like to the house, slowly creaked open. And we just heard, I was just like, I think all of the blood drained out of my body. I was like, Brandon, go. It was so great. It elevated it to a whole nother level. I could not sleep.
Aww,
freaked me out so either. Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, take us home.
That's it? That's all we got?
That's all we got.
All right. I mean, I guess we can end here as good as time as any. Thank you again for joining us. Melissa's way better at plugging, like, hey, you should check us out here and here and here, because I hate shameless self-promotion.
This isn't shameless self-promotion. I'm providing valuable information. You can listen to us anywhere where you listen to podcasts. We are pretty much on every single podcast platform. So please do. And like I said, if you like or hate the podcast, please review us and tell us what you want to hear about. We will read all of the reviews. And if you have any other just personal feedback, you can always email me, melissa@filmfrogmarketing.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you liked our ad hoc episode on this Groundhog Day.